Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, we're reviewing The Monkey, we are talking Captain America reactions, and we are answering your fan mail.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI. And a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 339 of Real Blend, a podcast that boldly predicts that Christopher Nolan's Tenet is going to win Best Picture this year. Hasn't happened yet, my friends. Hasn't happened.
Masterpiece. Just feel it.
On this week's show, we're going to review Osgood Perkins' new film, The Monkey. We're going to talk Captain America reactions, and I've had a chance to go see it. Kevin had a chance to go see it. Now that we've seen it in full, we're going to weigh in on that. And we put out the call for fan mail from the Blenders and received some really interesting suggestions from you guys. So we're going to try to answer as many of those as we can at the end of the show. Hello, my name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. Joined as always by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, Kev McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., and Gabe Kovach in the producer's chair. Gentlemen, it's good to be with you again, as always.
Look how handsome you are. Are you getting better looking?
No, not at all. I'm 51 now, by the way, guys.
You wear it well, sir. You wear it well. Whenever I tell people that, they tend to be shocked.
You know how many birthday messages I got on the Rebel and text thread?
Wait, today's your birthday?
When's your birthday?
I didn't get any. It was Monday.
No! Monday. To be fair, I think we were talking about your son's birthday, weren't we?
I mean, but yeah.
Wait a second. Your birthday was Monday? You're lying.
Yeah. No, I'm not. It's for the same day every year.
You didn't get a message from any of us?
February 17th. No, not a single one.
Well, happy belated, Sean.
Thank you, Gabe. I appreciate it.
Check my phone. Sometimes it takes a while for the text messages to tell. I mean, take a look at your phone.
Hold on. Let me take a look and see. Look at this.
I got that new Apple intelligence updated. I think it's a little buggy.
It's glitchy.
I love you too, Jakey. That's very sweet. To be fair, I think the Matt Damon Odyssey poster dropped that same day.
Yes.
That
was your birthday gift.
How am I going to compete with that? Yeah, exactly. I have Kevin telling me he's scared. I have.
If it makes you feel better, Kevin, Josh Horowitz, and I had dinner on Monday to celebrate your birthday.
That makes me feel amazing.
Right. It was on his birthday.
Yeah, we did it to celebrate you.
By the way, the comments underneath Jake's post for that were very, very funny. Someone said, did Sean take the substance?
The substance.
that I look different in glasses. So kudos, Blenders. You guys did an amazing job.
Well done. Well done.
Housekeeping. Hello. If you're watching us on YouTube, thank you very much for joining us. You get to see a visual element of the show. If not, you're listening all the different places you get your podcast needs met. Go down. Give us a like and a subscribe. Leave some comments down below. I like interacting with people in the comment section. And of course, we have Real Blend Premium, which gets you an ad-free version of the show. And if you want to find out how to figure out how to get that, there is description in the information on where to sign up. All right, so we're big fans of Stephen King on this podcast. Not quite like the King cast, which actually gets Stephen King to stop by, but we like the adaptations of his works. And a new one is coming to theaters called The Monkey. Jake, are you the only one who's seen it? Kev, have you seen it yet?
I've seen it, Kev.
All right. Nope. So Jake had a chance to see it. And the studio Neon seems pretty bullish on this one. They've been taking it out to theaters for some early advanced screenings. The reaction that I'm seeing from people is that it's one of the funniest Stephen King adaptations ever. And this is an adaptation of a short story that was in
Skeleton Crew.
Skeleton Crew, the compendium. Yeah. And the cover that I remember from that compendium growing up was the monkey with the symbols.
The symbols, which Disney owns the rights to, which is why they had to make it a drum.
Shut your mouth. They changed it.
So it's a drum. It's a drum now.
Disney owns symbols.
Disney owns the monkey with the symbols because they put it in Toy Story 4. Or Toy Story 3. One of the Toy Stories. So Disney owns the monkey with the symbols. So, but it's actually better. The way the monkey it almost feels like it's like drum rolling to a death. It actually, I think, is honestly better than it would have been with symbols.
And okay, this is directed by not another teen movie star, Osgood Perkins, right?
That's exactly right. Yes. That's exactly awesome. Right.
Who people might also know from Long Legs, the film that he directed most recently. So I think that adaptations of Stephen King's short stories sometimes do better than adaptations of his feature length books. Mm. So Jake, tell us about The Monkey. Tell us if it works. Give us your reaction to it.
You're absolutely right. And in that, I think a lot of times Stephen King short stories tend to be the length of other people's books. But in this case, it's more so like Osgood Perkins took sort of a lot of the ideas from the short story and really sort of expanded on it. I know it means nothing right now. It's as we're recording on February 19th, but like, this is my favorite movie so far this year. the only movie I've seen this year that I think like, oh, that has a really good shot of being on my top 10 list at the end of the year. I love this movie to pieces. Long Legs was on my top 10 last year. So I went into this very excited. I'm excited as a horror fan of sort of the voice that Osgood Perkins is bringing to the genre. To your point, Sean, one of the things I was not expecting was how funny it was. Like, there were a couple of moments early on where I was laughing out loud at some of the deaths. The idea of the story being that there is this wind up toy monkey that you wind it up on the back, the drumstick twirls in his hand, and then he goes and drums a little bit, and then someone in the near vicinity over the next probably, let's call it 24 hours, is going to die. Not just a death, but like a great, gruesome, hilariously morbid death.
Okay.
I've been sort of telling people like this is kind of like a Stephen King Final Destination movie. Like, Stephen King was doing Final Destination before there was Final Destination. Okay. I think this movie is smart. I think it is. It's got a really great blend of, it's not particularly scary is subjective, right? Like, what's scary to me is not scary to someone else, vice versa. It's not what I would call particularly scary. It's not quite as unsettling as something like Long Legs. Mm. There's nothing that's going to make you like, oof, like Nicolas Cage slamming his face down on the table. But I find it to be a much more watchable movie. Like, I'm much more likely to turn on The Monkey as opposed to Long Legs, which Long Legs has been a fun rewatch for me because I like trying to find all the little things that Osgood hid. But I had such a blast with this. It's got such a great vibe. I normally don't particularly love the horror comedy crossover. I've always found that sometimes they can sacrifice being a good horror movie for trying to be a good comedy.
But and see, this that's one, why I love the Freddy movies, because I think they're funny. Like,
see, I like them before they get a little too ridiculous. Like, I love the night. Don't get me wrong. I love the Nightmare movies. But even, you know, Robert Englund said on our show that he was always sort of angry in the edits that, you know, he would do a serious take in a little whippy one liner. Yeah. And they did that for the editors. And he always felt like they took the one liners a bit too far because it was an easy way to get out of a scene.
OK.
I think you guys would. Here's what I'll tell you. I'm going to Texas this weekend for my buddy's birthday. Mm-hmm. He mentioned wanting to see The Monkey.
You and Sean are going to Texas?
No, yes, we are. Someone's birthday who he cares about.
he mentioned wanting to see The Monkey and was like, well, like, yeah, he goes, I don't want to make you see it again. And I was like, honestly, let's go open it. Let's go Friday. Let's go because I want to see it with a crowd.
With a crowd.
Like, it is this movie is going to play so well with that opening night horror crowd. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. I there were a few other people in my theater when I saw it, a few other critics, but like I feel like I was the one that was howling laughing. And this is just going to play so well. And I'm excited to see it again and have that experience.
Kev, I'd be remiss not to ask you Annie's opinion on this, like a horror comedy. Where is this on her radar? Is she anticipating this?
Yeah, I mean, I know she's interested in it because we both loved Long Legs. I just don't know. I mean, based on the tone of what Jake is saying, because this kind of, again, very different, but kind of reminds me of what happened with Hard Eyes, where Hard Eyes was like was marketed as this horror film. Mm. And then it ended up being kind of a romantic comedy spliced together with horror. And I'm not saying that The Monkey is a similar thing, but I do wonder, based on Jake's review just now, if horror fans are expecting horror movie and they're actually going to get something that's a little more on the wacky side.
Well, what's funny is I didn't particularly care for Hard Eyes. Hard Eyes was a little too light for me.
Well, Hard Eyes was kind of like it was blending the genres, but it was more of a romantic comedy that had a slasher in it.
Sure. Yeah.
I just wonder sometimes, and the marketing behind The Monkey does seem like it's geared towards horror.
But I do find the marketing to be a little, like, the tagline for the movie is "Everybody dies and that's fucked up."
Like, yeah. Oh, so it's like, yeah, it's like self-aware.
I think it's very aware. There's that line from the movie, like, that they've now put on the poster just because of, like, I think they're aware of how ridiculous of a line it is. It's like that monkey that wants to kill our entire family. It's back. And it's, but so they just like, I saw one of the posters where they just put that line on the post. So like, to your point, Kevin, yes, I think they're very aware of it's a horror movie first and foremost. Mm. And then it's also funny.
Also, I'm trying to look this up here. Doesn't Osgood have another movie coming out this year?
Yeah. It's, I saw December. That somewhere. Yeah. Yeah.
When did he shoot?
I don't know. Soderbergh had a movie in January and has a movie next month.
I feel like he shot The Monkey a while ago.
Did he?
Because maybe he shot it a while ago and it just had to sit. Because I know it's been in, like, we've been writing about it at Cinema Blend for a long time. So.
I forgot that Osgood is in Nope.
Is he really
in Nope? Yeah, he played, I'm trying to remember this character, Flynn Bachman. Who was that? He's the character at the beginning when Kiki Palmer shows up. To do the Daniel Kaluuya are doing that green screen thing with the horse.
With the horse?
Yeah. I think he's the director, or he's like the AD.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Out of here, really?
Yeah. And he's also in Abrams Star Trek.
There's a monkey in Nope also.
Come on.
What was the name of the monkey in Nope?
There's a thematic thread developing here.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of the monkey in Nope? It was...
You're asking us. You watched that movie 11 times.
Of The Monkey in Nope. It was...
ironically, it was
Gordy. Gordy.
Gordy.
Gordy.
It was Osgood.
Yeah.
Well, and I will say, like, Osgood, like, you know, Long Legs was a fascinating film and obviously very much Silence of the Lambs in terms of that. But that was also a film that also... And again, I guess I think the reason why I'm speaking about The Monkey the way I am is because of how marketing can persuade the way you experience the movie in the end. Because a lot of people went to see Long Legs expecting one of the scariest movies of the year. And it was actually more psychological, like Silence of the Lambs, rather than like a horror film. And I think it's one of those things that I find interesting about the business is how people relate to trailers and how they relate that to the experience they have with the film. And a lot of the times... The marketing for a film is such a different animal than the movie itself. And they have to market. Hard Eyes was marketed as a slasher horror film. Like, I don't remember, Jake, I don't know if you remember the trailers for that. It came across to me as a slasher horror film.
Oh, yeah. It seemed like Scream set on Valentine's Day.
Right. And it ended up being a romantic comedy. So I think Long Legs, I remember asking Osgood about this when I interviewed him for Long Legs, about the idea of, is there a backlash to when you market something as the scariest movie ever or one of the scariest movies of all time and then people have a different experience?
It's a fair question.
Remember his answer now, but it's an interesting thing. I'm excited about The Monkey. We'll see.
So we'll get into marketing and trailers when we get into our next conversation, which is about Captain America Brave New World. But before we do that, let's throw it to a really quick ad break, and then we'll discuss how the latest Marvel film did in theaters on the other side.
wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Marvel has a new film in theaters. It's called Captain America: Brave New World. It is the first of three Marvel films that are going to be coming this year. And if you had asked me at the beginning to sort of gauge how I thought they were going to do, we talked at the end of this year, my guess would have been that Captain America: Brave New World would have been the third most successful of the films from a narrative standpoint, from a production standpoint, and also from the way that it's received. I'm putting a lot of eggs in the basket of Fantastic Four, The First Steps. I think there's a lot of curiosity for that one. I think the placement of it in July is really good for it. And if they do as well as I think they're going to do with that one, I think people who have been sort of tepid on Marvel are going to come back around. I would put Thunderbolt second just because the marketing to that seems like it's going to be a lot of fun. I like the cast a lot. I think Florence is great. I think David Harbour is great. And if they can, again, thread the needle on tone, that thing has a chance to do really well. Captain America: Brave New World came to theaters with a ton of reporting about reshoots and no one really being quite sure what the story was based on the marketing. And so to catch up with a little bit of what we were talking about earlier, I got a chance to go see it. The film did okay. It did at the domestic box office. It did $100 million. It did. Yeah. I mean, it's right. It's in the wheelhouse of a normal Marvel movie. It did $98 million international. The reviews weren't great. I mean, the reviews put it somewhere around the Eternals or Quantumania, you know, but the audience score on it was 80%. So people seemed to like it more than they did. I went to go see it. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I liked it. I didn't love it, but I did feel very much so that while I was watching it, I was watching the big moments from the trailers play out.
But that's not the movie's fault.
It's not, but there's essentially three set pieces in this film. They're all shown in the trailer. It's the attack on the White House with Harrison Ford. There's the aerial fight near the Celestial from the Eternals. And then there's the Hulk battle at the end. Could you have done this movie where they'd hid the Hulk fight? Maybe they don't get the normal people or casual folks to come in and see it. And then, you know, you can only sit on it until opening weekend. And then everyone's going to tell you that Harrison Ford turns in the Red Hulk. I don't know.
God, could you imagine the Harrison Ford press tour if he wasn't able to talk about the Hulk?
Oh, he wouldn't do it. Yeah. I don't think he would do it at all because his whole press tour was making funny Hulk faces. I've been telling people, and I still do believe this, I think this is the last of the Marvel films that is affected in some way by the combination of COVID delays and the strikes that took place after the fact.
But do you like, okay, maybe you're talking more about the writing, because sure. I agree that the script could have used a polish, but sure. I feel like aside from three or four god awful blue screen shots that how did someone just say, let's just cut away to something else?
Yeah.
For the most part, I thought it was one of the better looking Marvel movies in a while.
Without a doubt. I'm more saying that at any given moment, Marvel has X amount of projects in pre-production. And I think that those processes were affected. And I think Captain America: Brave New World is one of the last of those movies to be affected. Like, it might not have been very far along, but there was a time when people probably should have been all hands on deck working on it, and they probably couldn't have been.
Yeah.
I do think with them pumping the brakes, it's allowing their visual effects artists to do better. Because yes, I thought the stuff at the Celestial, the aerial fight sequences looked fantastic. And the Hulk stuff was great. I mean, truly great. It looked fantastic. I'll go back to the theater to go see this on the big screen one more time just because I thought the set pieces looked fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't want to say that about, you know, Thor Love and Thunder, you know, or Ant-Man Quantumania, or even Guardians 3, you know, which I thought Guardians 3 looked okay and the story was good, but I wasn't compelled to go see it. Again, I was very much just like, when that's on Disney Plus again, I'll definitely queue it up. But I'll go see Brave New World in theaters again. I loved Anthony Mackie. Mm-hmm. I thought Mackie was fantastic. I still do push back on some of this, like the helmets that just dissolve off the faces. Terrible, terrible. Yeah. You know, someone put a clip on social media and it was just a simple gif of Robert Downey Jr. like removing a physical Iron Man helmet. And they were like, we used to be a society. And I was like, yes, I feel that way too. I'm so tired of the nanotech helmets that fade back. But I liked his approach to Captain America. And if this is a movie that exists to establish him as Captain America in the world moving forward, then God bless. I think it's fantastic. Kev, you got a chance to catch up with the full one after the 25 minutes. Did it still hold up where you thought it was?
Yeah, I was just sitting in the theater just so perplexed by the negativity surrounding this film. And I think, again, this goes back to kind of what I was saying earlier about people's expectations of things and then the actual experience with the film itself. To me, this just kind of reminded me of the old 90s political thrillers. It was grounded in that Winter Soldier realm, but also, you know, in the fantastical element of the superhero aspect. But to me, this is a very character driven piece. I think the human story about what Anthony Mackie is struggling with his, you know, with everything that's going on, taking on Captain America. I don't know. Can we dive into
Isaiah Bradley bit is a great storyline. Yeah, that's, I think we can talk openly about it. I mean, this is going to be a spoiler conversation.
Is that so. Okay, so. Gabe? All right. So spoiler
just
warning.
Fair enough warning. Spoiler warning.
Hmm? Well, first of all, Isaiah Bradley. So that character to me is the grounded nature of the movie. Mm-hmm. That to me is what makes the human story so solid, because the character does not want to go to the White House and what the character has to go through, and then being imprisoned after what happens. That is the hook of the story, because
you feel that.
Yes, you mm-hmm. want Anthony Mackie to succeed to get his friend out of prison. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you have all these things happening with the superhero aspect of it and the Celestial fight, as you mentioned, and then the Red Hulk aspect of it as well. But I'm always thinking about Isaiah Bradley's character mm-hmm. and how he's going to eventually get him out. And that to me kind of just reminded me of those really good political thrillers, or somebody is accused of something that they didn't do, even though it looked like they did it. And it's a really interesting thing, the emotional connection that those characters have. And also at the same time, I thought the score was incredible. I thought the needle drops were great. I loved hearing Kendrick at the end of the movie. I thought the Sebastian Stan scene was excellent.
I love that cameo.
I thought that was a great cameo. It was well written. It had good Marvel comedic timing at the end, but also a serious message throughout. And I also thought Harrison Ford was remarkable. I thought he was just so much fun. He played the character so serious and so like a 90s, like Air Force One style.
Sure.
Like it just felt like that type of character you would have seen in like a 90s political action movie. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting to me is when I think back on that movie now, I think more of the human story than I do of the superhero story.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that's why it works. And at the end of the day, one of the great reminders that movie gives you in the beginning when Anthony's in a fight is the character says, I hurt your rib. Anthony's not a superhero. I mean, he's a superhero, the character Captain
Didn't take
America.
The serum. Yeah.
But he is a human being who can be killed. So there are stakes. And so I thought that grounded human story was what made it work so great. Also, I thought the villain was solid. I thought it was a really good villain.
The leader?
Tim Blake Nelson.
I thought Tim Blake Nelson was great. And I thought that whole storyline about Harrison Ford's character. Yeah, I thought it was all well done. But to Isaiah Bradley is the key to why that film works so well.
It's a weird Hulk sequel. You almost
as someone who loves the Incredible Hulk, like it made me very like I was very into
They finally made a sequel to The Incredible Hulk, and it doesn't have the Hulk in it.
It doesn't have the Hulk. It has a Hulk.
Yeah. It is like they put Captain America in a Hulk sequel kind of thing. But when you go back to even the most recent Marvel movies that are dismissed as conventional or middle tier, I'm thinking like a Black Widow or something like that. The elements that I remember from that movie are the family at the core of it,
human
right?
Like stuff.
Yes. The relationship between Natasha and Yelena and the way that people bonded with that, the chemistry between Harbor and Scarlett Johansson. And so then when you throw in, because I know we were poking fun at the blue screen stuff with the ship falling out of the sky and the fight, like, I get it. It has to be there. It's a superhero movie, but the better ones find a way for us to connect to that kind of stuff. And in an Ant-Man movie in Quantumania, like, I didn't care so much about his daughter, you know, and that whole element of it. So I didn't connect the way I did. And I found plenty of stuff to connect with in Brave New World.
I mean, just like any genre, whether it be musical or action or comedy, the comedy or the action and the musical are those parts are supposed to be narrative pushes that push the story forward. If you don't care about the character, the action is just going to be completely mindless. And it's like, that's why you look at John Wick when they kill his dog, you are with him the whole time. You understand why he's doing what he's doing. Not that we're condoning violence, but you understand the emotional connection of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if the Isaiah Bradley stuff didn't work in the beginning, your movie doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I think Anthony Mackie is so good in this role. He's and Ford says it to him in the movie. You're not Steve Rogers. He's Sam Wilson. This is not Steve Rogers. This is a very different character. And I think that Mackie, like, even there's a great scene at the end of the film where Mackie and Danny Ramirez are sitting in the hospital together. Phenomenal scene, like, just really good grounded emotional dialogue about, like, remember he gives him the tip on how what he needs to do with his thrusters when he's flying. I thought that whole dynamic was really, really special. I mean, to me, I thought the film was incredibly solid. I don't understand. I mean, I get that it's not perfect, but
people
it's
went into
the
movie with their pitchforks already sharpened. They went in looking for things to nitpick.
But Mackie's great. He and for the first movie, he's theoretically led, which were his words. He said that in an interview recently where he was like, this is like the first movie that's really mine.
Yeah.
I thought he carried the hell out of it. And I thought him and Ford had some great dialogue scenes.
What's a drop? What do you think? What's a percentage drop that it might see?
What would probably be 40.
Think so? I think they'd be happy with 40.
I'm gonna say between 55 and 60.
Is the monkey much competition for it?
I don't know how many theaters they're putting the monkey in. Are they going?
I think the monkey's gonna do well.
Okay, like, monkey will probably do like what, like 15.
But are they competitive? I mean, I think a general.
I don't think they're necessarily
is
competitive. I think Marvel movies tend to be front loaded.
Yeah. The people who wanted to see it saw it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Hulk stuff is really good, though. I wonder, to your point, Sean, like, I wonder how many of the Marvel base, like the Marvel fans that are there all the time, are really interested in seeing another great, like, seeing those set pieces again in a theater.
It's a character that has been underserved too. I mean, you know, outside of Endgame, he really only showed up in She-Hulk after that, and we haven't seen a true Hulk in a long time.
Also,
the last time we like truly saw like the Hulk be the Hulk, I think, was Ragnarok.
And not even just like smart Hulk, but just even like Hulk's action scenes have been not as brutal. Like, he's been a more well-rounded, like, kind of.
Yeah. I don't know. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see that. Like, I want to see the Hulk. Yeah. Like, I don't want to see the Hulk like handing Ant-Man tacos.
A lot of like classic, like the Hulk clap. I don't know what that's called. Yeah, the clap and like throwing the car. I thought he was.
Well, you know
what
he was doing. He was syncing up for the podcast.
He was. Yes. He was. I thought what would have really done it for me, and maybe it's more of a video game reference. I'm sure it's in the comics, but I remember playing the like Incredible Hulk video game or whatever it was. I thought he was gonna make I thought he was gonna take the car and make Hulk fists.
Where he
beats somebody up with like the car.
Remember, and he does that in The Incredible Hulk. Doesn't he rip a car in half?
I think so.
And he has, honest to God, I stand by the Norton Hulk movie. I think it's good. I think it is good.
I like it.
I also wish Isaiah Bradley did more press for that movie. I got to give Brandon Davis a shout out because I think he had Isaiah on his.
Carl Lumley. The actor's name is Carl Lumley.
Oh, I'm talking about the character. I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. I keep saying the character's name. But Carl Lumley. But he had him on the podcast, and he was talking about, because there's that scene in the beginning where the character runs out of the White House, and he has that suit on, And Brandon had asked him about that suit, because that suit becomes a character in the film itself when he's like on the ground. But
when he says that, "Don't mess up my suit," it's a heartbreaking line.
It really is. So great. Carl Lumley, like that, I think Carl deserves like so much credit for that film and why it's so great. And that Isaiah Bradley character is fantastic.
Kev, did you watch all of Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
No, I saw pieces of it.
If you like that character, the show overall is middling. But if you like that character, his stuff in the show is really great.
Honestly, that would make me want to go back and watch it.
It's better than the stuff in the movie. Like, the movie has new stuff. Yeah. But, like, his emotional stuff, like, they kind of just summarize it really quickly in the movie. Yeah. He has a really great arc and, like, storyline that makes...
There are great moments in that show.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Like, 100%. Well, I still think one of the most striking images is... Wyatt Russell holding the Captain America shield with blood dripping off of
on it.
That is, I think, a top 10 Marvel image.
Yeah.
Also, should we give Carl Lumley a shout out for his role in Dr. Sleep real quick?
Oh, my God, he was brilliant.
That is one of the best roles. That role is incredible.
He's a Flanniverse. He's Dr. Sleep, and he's in The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yes, he is. He's interviewing.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's that actor's name? God damn it.
Oh.
Who replaced...
He replaced Langella.
Bruce Greenwood. Yeah. God, they're amazing in that scene together.
I need to go back and watch House of Usher.
It's good. Yeah. It's great. I recommend it.
It's fantastic.
The fact that it's that good, and I'm not trying to get on a Flanagan, whatever.
No one's going to complain.
I would probably rank Usher maybe third amongst his TV shows. The fact that it's as good as it is, and it's third, tells you how good Flanagan is. Because I would put Hill House 1 and Midnight Mass 2.
Yeah.
I think I might like Usher more than Hill House.
Wow.
I can see that. They're different enough. I can see
it's
that. That's
so
a,
good.
That's a preference. Yeah. And I've said this before. I think I said this several times on a rewatch. Bly Manor, better than we gave it credit for.
I gotta rewatch it because I didn't love it whenever I watched it.
I think maybe we went into it with too much Hill House expectations because it's kind of like a anthology sequel sort of thing in a sense. But it's just a very different when you realize it's a love story and that it's got much more like more about the heart and the characters and all these like emotional little moments. The cast is amazing. That is wonderful. I did have before we get off cap. A timeline character curious question. So is Bucky in Thunderbolts? Is he going to be running for office and doing these like superhero anti-hero
mission
stuff? Like,
I'm confused by that.
Okay. Same.
And if you're confused.
Yeah. Yeah.
General public is confused.
I like that as like flavor for his character. Like I like Bucky as this 100-something-year-old, you know, super soldier running for office.
But I even had to ask a friend, like, has that been mentioned yet? Like, was that brought up that he's running? And I didn't know because, like, they come into it just like he's campaigning sort of thing.
Yeah.
The question becomes, to get super nerdy, who is Thaddeus Ross's vice president? Because I don't think they ever say who it is.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And very clearly, by the end of the movie, that person's going to become pretty important, which makes me think that
plot hole that they left that out.
Well, I know.
Is Ford in Thunderbolts?
Not that I know of. Maybe because he might have shot stuff just being in on the raft, like being in prison.
Yeah.
Where they'll cut to him. Because now it makes a lot more sense where he's like, we're the Thunderbolts. And he's like, we can't call ourselves that. Because Ross is in prison.
Yeah.
It makes me think that Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, Valentina, maybe she's the vice president. Maybe she's in some position of power.
Interesting.
Because at the beginning of the Thunderbolts trailer, she's speaking before a congressional board and she's like, the Avengers aren't coming, you know. So I think it's going to get answered in Thunderbolts. But to answer your question, I don't really know. It's confusing to me.
Yeah. But this takes place after Cap 4. Like, we're assuming the timeline is linear at this point.
Yes. As far as I know. Yes.
Okay.
So,
yeah, that's interesting. Thunderbolts, I'm really excited for. I just want
it to be fun.
I mean, David Harbour's humor, Sebastian Stan's humor, the Florence Pugh, like all of that is going to mix, I think, really well. And it looks like it's mixing really well. I also like Wyatt Russell. Like, I really enjoy Wyatt Russell in that role. So,
well, the fact that, like, there was that line from Harbor in the trailer about, like, we could be on the Wheaties box, and the first poster is, like, basically a Wheaties box cover.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that, to me, that says, oh, that's, you get it. You got the marketing, like, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, and I'm sure this is what they're chasing, very similar to, like, a Guardians. Like, remember, I think the tagline for Guardians Volume 2 was, like, obviously.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, they get it.
Well, and even like the tag at the end of the teaser that showed the very first Guardians was John C. Reilly being like, what a bunch of a-holes.
Yeah, what a bunch of a-holes.
John C. Reilly, man.
If you, just a little shout out, if you didn't watch Creature Commandos, which is DC, David Harbour as Frankenstein in that show is one of the funniest things I've seen in a really long time.
Harbour has become an actor that can do no wrong for me now. God, like, he's so charming. I bet if I go back and I watch Quantum of Solace, I'll enjoy it more. like just that's cause how, just because I've become such a fan over the last, you know, I don't know, since Stranger Things probably started about then.
All right, well, let's do it. One more ad break, and on the other side of it, we're going to answer some fan mail that you guys were nice enough to send in. And we are back. Okay, so we wanted to open up the lines of communication with the Blenders and get some fan mail answered. And so we solicited on social media, and you guys were nice enough to respond. So, Gabe, why don't you run us through some of the best questions that we got from the people?
Yes, thank you all for writing in. It's kind of a fun throwback when we used to do the premium show. Jake, this is your cue.
Premium.
We used to do a monthly mailbag, so this is a fun little throwback, and we'll jump right in. I want to start with one that I thought was fun and something we don't really talk about, so I am also curious your guys' thoughts. It's kind of a two-parter. I'll start with this. A bunch of people were asking about Letterboxd. We got a bunch of Letterboxd questions, and a couple people asking, this one from Casey Free, why don't you guys have Letterboxd accounts?
I do.
Do you use it?
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I don't use it, but I weirdly enough, this is the strangest coincidence, I just started thinking about using it more yesterday.
That's funny.
So I want to give a little timestamp, because Gabe sent along some questions today in our text thread about, like, what we were going to talk about on the show. And one of the questions I think he's about to bring up is what are our four favorites?
Which we'll get to,
I was in the app yesterday and I had to pick my four favorites.
There we go.
And it was actually kind of hard. Mm.
Stay tuned, folks. We're going to have a reveal.
But I actually have them. Weirdly enough, I have my four.
Wow.
Do you want to read them now?
You can't pick Oppenheimer four times, Kevin.
Well, Kev, wait. Tease your handle. Is it just Kevin McCarthy?
Well, I don't even know how do you. I don't even know I think it's Kevin McCarthy DC.
It hasn't happened yet. Is that what it is?
No, I made it 3 or 4 years ago, and then I forgot that I had it.
I have the same thing. I have one, but I don't use it.
It's Kevin McCarthy DC is the name of my. I don't know why it's that, but
if you can change it, you should change it to We Aren't Ready. Or I'm scared.
if somebody in the comments can let me know how to change my title thing, let me know.
No, I'm just supposed to. All right, so Kev has one. Sean and Jake, to round out this question from Casey, do you have one that you just don't use? Have you thought about it? Is there a reason you don't? Or
I do have one, and I have tried to do the exercise of, like, just answering, like, rating movies as they just pop up. And to me, it was exhausting. Like, it just
for you, Sean, I mean, you write your reviews professionally. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff that you don't write reviews on that I'm sure you put up. But I think often your first thought is like, I will just write about this on the website.
Right. I have an outlet kind of thing. Yeah. It's just like the idea of sitting there and also we've discussed this, like, your opinion kind of changes on movies. Not drastically, probably. I'm not going to go from like 1 star to 5 stars kind of thing. But I don't know. I just... the whole exercise of it was just like,
An idea that this, it might be kind of complicated, but it could be fun.
We start our own app called it Real Boxed.
No, but if we guessed what we think the other person's four are.
Oh, God.
Like, almost like a reverse IMDb kind of thing where like we all write down our four right now.
Okay.
And then we each take a stab at each person's four to see how close we get.
All right.
I could do that. You guys ready for Jake? I'm writing down my four.
Jake, yeah, let me get your thoughts. And when everyone has a four, we'll do that little fun game.
I mean, listen, we all love movies more than just about anything in the world. And I have
more than Sean's birthday.
Well, that's not saying much. The bar is low.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. Honestly, I've been thinking about that the whole show, and I feel terrible because Sean and I were on the phone yesterday, and I felt terrible. So here's what I'll say. With our love of movies, by nature of the fact that we are very, very fortunate that all of us have been able to make a living out of our love of movies. There's already enough, at least in my life, enough obligation attached to a thing that I love a lot. Like the fact that so often I'll go see a movie, but I've got to bring pen and paper because I got to write notes because mm-hmm. I got to prepare for an interview. The fact that, like, you know, so much of this love of mine is tied to also a thing that I have to do. Like, also it is a job as well in a lot of ways. And I don't need another thing that feels like an obligation that's being tied to a thing that I don't want to feel that obligation of like, oh, I went and saw this movie, but now I gotta get on Letterboxd. Now I gotta say something clever about it. Now I gotta.
No, like, you can just rate.
I don't want to have to quantify everything. I don't want to have to.
The same way.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, if anything, I'd like to remove obligations from my love of film and just be able to just, you know, enjoy. Again, like I mentioned, I'm just going to go see The Monkey on Friday and just be able to watch it. You know, mm-hmm. and without having to worry about, well, what am I going to ask Osgood Perkins or what? And again, woe is me, first world problems. Oh, okay. But I think that's been one of the, because I've thought about the whole Letterboxd thing a lot, and it just doesn't, it's just not appealing to me. You know, here's what, to steal one of my favorite lines from John Mulaney's stand up. I'm around. Like, if you want to know, like, if you want to know what I think of a movie, ask. Right. I am also of the belief that, like, I don't like putting a lot of my energy into things that I don't like. People often will come at me and say, well, you're like, dude, you like everything. And I go, you know, no, I don't. I just only talk about the things that I like.
Eric Davis says that a lot. Eric Davis, yeah. Our friend from Fandango. Mm-hmm. Whenever he tweets a positive thing, someone's like, you only write about positive things. He goes, no, I only choose to share about the things that I like instead of slamming something that didn't connect with me for some reason. I think that's really healthy. That's a good way to do it.
And I think over time we all realize that not only do your opinions change, but like, you know that your opinion is just so very specific to you in this moment.
Sure.
And the idea that like everyone here has the... almost like there's almost like a power there to like almost shut down someone's interest in a thing that they might love because they're a completely different person who's in a completely different place. And just because something, you know, 99.9% of movies just don't work, you know, that don't work for you might still work for someone else. Like there's a very rare, if at all.
I'm sure you guys have experienced this. I've had people come up to me and go, what did you think of this movie? And I'll go, you know, it didn't really work for me. And you could feel them like kind of recoil and go like, oh yeah, yeah, me too. And I go, no. Like, did you tell me why you let's talk about it. You know, like there's like, that's
what I want to hear because someone else being excited about it can turn my opinion around.
Exactly. Like what did I miss? I would rather not like a movie and have someone tell me why they did than the opposite. Right. Than me like a movie and have someone point out all that. That's why I can't watch the they're well written and they're well edited, but I can't watch the Screen Junkies honest trailers because I don't want them to make me realize things I didn't realize about movies I love, which they often do.
By the way, I've done my four Letterboxd and I've changed two titles twice just to go show you how impossible this task is.
Jake, did you have a chance to write yours down?
I was rambling. You guys start. Let's go.
I also wrote down the four that I think are the four for the other guys.
Okay. Let's go with, well, Jake is still going. Let's come back to this. I'll go to another question to give Jake some time to think about it.
Good idea, but I think I know who the other guys are.
So we'll come back to reveal.
I have mine.
Oh, you have them? Okay.
Yeah.
How should we do this?
Pick a person and the other two guess.
This is like the IMDb game for each other.
For each other.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
All right.
Sean, what do you think are Jake's four?
Okay. I would think Jake has Road to Perdition, The Dark Knight, The Shining, and The Thing.
You're 0 for 4. Oh, sorry.
I'm 0 for... You don't have Road to Perdition? You're lying to yourself.
You don't have Road to Perdition? For real? It's your favorite movie of all time.
It's his fifth favorite movie of all time.
All right.
Okay. We change. We change. We evolve.
All right. Jake's 4 are Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's a good one.
Raiders.
Okay.
Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And... Hold on. Jaws.
Kevin's much more spot on. Kevin,
he's a better friend.
Jurassic Park, Pulp Fiction, Empire Strikes Back, and Jaws.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very nice. Yeah. Very
Jurassic nice. Is smart. You didn't put Road to Perdition. That's horseshit.
I go back to like, okay, movies that I would put on right now. I went through a huge chunk of my life where Road to Perdition is my favorite. And I would still put it in my top 10.
Why do you hate that movie?
Jesus Christ.
Jake, what do you think are Sean's 4 Letterboxd?
Kevin, you go first because I haven't had a chance to think about you guys. Kevin, I was thinking about myself.
Okay. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Good call.
I was going to say The Patriot because he's in it, but this is tough. I'm going to say...
That's such great Sean lore that he's in The Patriot.
I'm going to say... Spidey 1 with Toby.
Okay.
That's good.
Endgame.
Good call.
And hold on. This is tough. I'm going to go.
Sean's got tastes that are. He loves a lot of different things. Yeah.
I'm going to go.
Sean's tough. I think Sean's very tough.
I'm going to go with.
Because Sean, you could have 4 superhero movies because Sean genuinely loves superhero movies. But he could also have 3 like small movies that just meant a lot to him that you would be like, oh, shit. Yeah, of course. He loves that.
I'm going to go with. I'm just going to add Infinity War.
OK.
Oh, wow. The back to back.
OK.
Jake, do you have 4 for Sean?
I had a few. I immediately started writing down a few that Kevin. My mind went to Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Because I know the personal connection.
Mm hmm.
I feel like I've got to say Endgame.
Okay.
I'm going to say Spider-Verse.
Okay.
What was it? Oh, and then Die Hard.
Oh, right. Yeah. I forgot Die Hard.
All right. Jake got 1. Kev got 0.
What are your...
wait. Okay. Endgame didn't make it because I remember a phone call.
Yeah.
One of the best movies ever made. You told me.
No. I remember a phone call where he said it's the best movie I've ever seen.
But then Spider-Man No Way Home came out.
Come on. Come on.
So I had Die Hard.
Yeah.
I have Spider-Man No Way Home. I put Back to the Future. And I put The Social Network.
Oh. Why do you hate Michelle? And the personal connection that you guys share with Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Said that and never crossed my mind.
Wow.
Never once crossed my mind.
Yeah. So you know what's crazy? Oh, Brother was the first one that I wrote down.
I crossed out North by Northwest, which is my favorite Hitchcock, but I swapped it for No Way Home.
Wow.
I know.
Sorry, I misinterpreted Endgame's my favorite movie as Endgame being your favorite movie.
At the time, it was. Then the 3 Spider-Men got
welcome
together.
Welcome to Road to Perditionville.
Oh, that Jaws happened?
Are we going on Endgame is 6 years old this year, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yes.
When can we start being honest about it? Has enough time passed?
Hey, Mackie gave me the On Your Left story. It's pretty great.
It's a great story.
It's
a great story.
This is
really
Kevin, we gotta guess Kevin.
We have Kevin. Sean, what do you think are Kevin's official? Kevin's published these. What are his official 4?
Yeah, don't look.
T2, Interstellar. Pulp Fiction and Clerks.
Jake.
Those are my guesses.
Jake, what are your guesses for Kev?
T2, Interstellar, Oppenheimer,
ooh.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay, so Jake got 2. Sean, you had my first 3 exact.
Did I really?
Come on.
So my 4 are T2, Interstellar, Pulp Fiction, and Vertigo. Vertigo simply because it, I think it has the greatest shot of all time.
And it's got, you gotta have it. Yeah. I imagine.
Do you hate Kevin Smith?
I know.
If lists have taught us anything on this show, it's that if it's not on our list, we don't like it.
We hate it.
Yeah, we absolutely hate it.
That was really fun.
A shout out to longtime listener Anastasia Creighton, who asked what your four Letterboxd movies would be on your Letterboxd.
You know what's so funny is I see people like them do that with celebs on the red carpet. I always think, God, I would panic. But yeah, I know a lot of times they know in advance it's going to happen, so they're like ready to go.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That brings us to a question from Blake. I think that works out really well. It's sort of individual question for each of you. Okay, so you have to keep one and erase the other one for forever. Kevin, you have to pick between Interstellar and The Dark Knight.
Kevin.
Dark Knight's going away.
No, Kevin.
I love The Dark Knight, but Interstellar is superior.
I almost feel like that wouldn't change the industry. Well, no, I guess Dark Knight would change the industry if it didn't exist completely.
Come
on. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, what does the DCEU even look like?
Maybe better.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Sean.
Yes.
Erase one, keep the other forever. No Way Home or Into the Spider-Verse?
Ooh. Oh, that's actually easier for me. I would get rid of Spider-Verse.
Yeah,
I would get rid of Spider-Verse.
You do love No Way Home.
No Way Home is a miracle that shouldn't exist.
Yeah,
like
it's
your
Super Bowl.
Into the Spider-Verse is an outstanding achievement, you know, in animation. Yeah. But the logistics of making No Way Home happen should be impossible.
Pretty crazy. And then Jake, keep one, erase the other forever. Jurassic Park or Raiders of the Lost Ark?
That's easy for me.
Yeah,
I mean, do you keep the other indies?
Do you keep the other Jurassics, right?
I won't answer for Jake, but this is impossible. Jake have very similar tastes, I think, when it comes to like this kind of question.
Yeah, this is, you know what? The only thing that may have been a harder one is Jurassic or Jaws. This is going to be blasphemy to a lot of people, but I'm keeping Jurassic Park.
No,
I know, I guess, you know, but I mean, you have to keep in mind, I can honestly, without question, say that Jurassic Park is the movie I've watched more than any other movie on this planet. Yes. I've watched it like probably, what are we? It's February, mid-February. I've watched it at least once this year.
No, you haven't.
I swear to God. Why? It's a comfort movie for me. It's a comfort movie. Yeah.
But Raiders is Raiders. It's fine. And Raiders.
I watched Raiders as well.
But to turn it into math, would you rather erase the best Jurassic Park movie, and some argue the only good one? I disagree with that, but some argue that. Or one of the like three great indie movies? I like all three of the first three indie movies.
I'm about to say, at least if you erase one of the great indies, you're left with other great indies.
Exactly.
If you erase Jurassic, at best, you're left with Lost World, which I still think, I still argue is good. But it's not the same.
Jurassic Park is, out of this world. Out of this world. Awesome.
It's an adventure. 65 million years in the making.
Another longtime listener, Ray Perkin, writes in and asks, what is a current director-actor team-up you'd love to see?
Oh, I have an answer. I looked at this one and I have an answer. So I just watched Reacher season 3. And nice. I love Alan Ritchson. Mm-hmm. And I think he's untapped potential. And I would like him to do a Michael Bay movie. I want Michael Bay to work with Alan Ritchson.
Interesting.
But not do like a commentary Pain and Gain movie. Like I want a full blown.
You want
Bad Boys or The Rock.
Yeah.
You know, where Ritchson's doing early Schwarzenegger type stuff.
And he's really good with humor, though, too. Like a funny Michael Bay action hero type.
Absolutely.
Thing.
Yeah. And just have him like crushing out in an old like a 90s style action movie.
I like that.
I'd like to see that.
I like that. Let's get Michael Bay's Die Hard. Let's go.
I love a good like Denzel yelling scene.
Oh, nice.
And I would love to see Denzel yelling Tarantino dialogue.
Oh my God. Yeah, that would be good.
I mean, those two really combined good. Together, like Denzel just chewing up the scene, but the words of Tarantino coming out of his mouth.
Yeah. Oh man, that's good.
And then because it's Tarantino, you inevitably get like Sam Jackson showing up sometimes.
I was about to say Denzel
yelling at Sam Jackson or something. Yeah. Great. That's fantastic. Kev, do you have one?
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be Chris Nolan directing Tom Cruise, but like all practical in IMAX.
Oh, Tarantino God. Tom Cruise would also be supposed to happen, but
because that'd be when amazing. I saw Ghost Protocol was the one I think the only Mission film that was shot with 65mm IMAX cameras, and that was you got to see the full IMAX and the Burj Khalifa sequence and some of the other sequences as well. I want to see a full IMAX movie practically done with Tom Cruise directed by Chris Nolan.
God, that would be amazing. We may get close. Well, we're going to get close to that with F1. Whatever Kaczynski's doing with Pitt in those cars is going to be pretty amazing. I also, let me just throw one out there too, it could never happen. But when I was writing the Bruce Willis book, I envisioned snappy Bruce Willis humor from the Coen brothers. I just thought he would have been phenomenal.
That would play
in a Coen brothers comedy in a Clooney-esque kind of role.
Yeah.
Would have been great. So
I would like Tom Hanks to get another shot at a Coen brothers movie.
I would like that too. Yeah.
I don't hate Lady Killers the way I think Lady Killers has an identity problem where it doesn't know exactly what kind of movie it wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that Hanks is good in that movie. He's like Colonel Sanders
character.
He's like he's playing like a murdering Colonel Sanders. I love it.
Character's just weird.
I'd like to see Spielberg direct Denzel.
Oof. Yeah.
It's I did like you ever have that moment where you had to pause and go, surely they have, but no.
Yeah, that's tough.
Man, I'd really like to see Scorsese tap into potential that is De Niro or maybe DiCaprio one day.
That's good.
I don't know if we'll ever see that. No. They're just too big, you know. two stars can't get that
I'd like to see it between perhaps, 6 to 8 times.
Perhaps even in the same movie.
Oh wow.
Perhaps even in the same
movie. One can dream. One can dream. Put that on your letterbox. All right, this one we can go around the horn. I don't know if you guys have had time to think about this one, but what from Andrew Fetter? What's the real blend Mount Rushmore of movie villains?
Ooh. Okay, I feel like. Do we all get one?
Stream of consciousness. Yeah. Let's just throw them out there and we can see. Yeah,
Hannibal's got to be on there. What? What? Really? Hey, no question. Hannibal has to be on there.
I don't know if he has to be on there, but he's in.
AFI voted him the greatest villain of all time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot this was the AFI podcast.
I would argue Hans Gruber has to be on there. I think Gruber's got to get one of the slots.
Over Hannibal Lecter?
Not over. Hannibal's still in the conversation.
Okay, I'm going to say something and I don't want to hear shit from you guys. I don't want to hear shit.
Darth Vader.
Ooh, Darth Vader.
Yeah,
Darth Vader should be there.
I'm going to say this and then silence. The shark.
I think that's fair.
Not the villain.
Now imagine the shark in stone.
The shark in stone.
I think
you could make the case, you know, that the shark should
Darth
be there.
Darth Vader for sure.
But Darth Vader.
I think y'all are sleeping on one of the greatest villains of all time.
Okay.
T-1000.
Yeah, no, I know. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
T-1000 or T-800 from the first movie.
I don't know. There's a part of me that goes T-800.
T-1000.
T-1000. All right.
I don't know if it makes Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. The Xenomorph?
I was going to say the Xenomorph. Would you, if you had to pick between the shark and the Xenomorph?
I don't consider the Xenomorph a villain.
Kevin.
I mean, it's just.
Really don't. I think she's protecting her family.
But that's not.
Just protecting her family.
So is Dracula.
What about
Dracula is actually manipulating and trying to kill people.
Yeah, because he's thirsty for blood. Like, yeah.
The Xenomorph. And
he's doing what vampires do.
Exactly.
And the shark from Jaws are in their own
world. I mean,
world.
You could be like, okay, like Hannibal's a cannibal. Like he's just doing what cannibals do.
No, that's an actual, he's literally manipulating people and trying to kill them. Like,
I mean, the Xenomorph is manipulating people. It's a setting traps.
Protecting her babies. Yeah.
What about like a Jason, like a Jason Voorhees or a.
I put Michael Myers up.
Myers
over Freddy?
For me, I'm a Michael Myers over Freddy.
Freddy is just so singular because it can't be anyone but Robert Englund.
What about Ledger's Joker? Yeah.
Ledger's Joker? All right, so right now I feel
we've
like
got
the
18
three
faces on.
I feel like Vader is a lock.
Yep.
Is Ledger's Joker a lock?
There are others I'd put above, but I won't necessarily throw a fit if we put
wouldn't
him
be upset
there.
At that.
Is Gruber a lock or no?
Not for me.
Okay.
The Shark?
Is the Shark a lock?
It's not a villain.
This is gonna be too hard. We're not gonna answer this.
It's just gonna be Darth Vader and three blank spots.
So yeah, to be determined.
Voldemort or Anton.
Oh, yeah.
Anton Chigurh from
Chigurh should be on there.
Not top four. Over Hannibal Lecter? What is wrong with you people?
I might.
Come Hannibal on. Lecter?
Yes.
He didn't really do anything. What did he do? He didn't really do anything.
Tell that cop that who got strung up in his cell that he did. Tell the guy whose liver he ate with beans.
I'll tell you who belongs on the Mount Rushmore movie villains. Fucking Jenny from Forrest Gump. And that's the truth. And I mean that. She is one of the worst villains put to screen. She's awful. She's an awful person. She's a terrible character and an awful person to poor Forrest.
Can we put the broader population as the villain for not liking Babylon enough?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Does Vito Corleone count as a villain?
Not really. I don't think so. Are you looking at a list?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
What about Gravity?
I think Michael Myers. I think Michael Myers has to be on there. I think he's the seminal horror movie villain.
I love that.
I mean, I'm not mad. I like that.
And that visage looks great in stone. You know? True. Oh, yeah. I'm making a monument here.
Norman Bates.
Bates is that's like a classic.
Oh, what about the Hans Landa, the devil or Captain Howdy? From,
he was an absentee landlord.
He's okay. Maybe not Vito. Is Michael Corleone a villain?
Yeah, probably. Michael's the villain of the whole trilogy.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's too hard.
All right. So we don't necessarily nail this down. So we have Vader as our one lock.
Jack Torrance.
Michael Myers.
So we have two of the four, right?
Apparently Hannibal Lecter.
I mean, I'm not upset at Hannibal Lecter on there. It's a classic, but I just don't think it's a lock.
People would visit the Mount Rushmore and they would look and be like, why is Richard Nixon up there? There's nothing even like distinguishing about him.
No, you'd have him in the mask. The shark should be on there.
Oh, the shark.
You'd have him in the mask.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hannibal in the mask.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about the imagery now.
And the imagery. Jake. Art the Clown.
I mean, I'm sorry. I didn't know I needed to say this. Darth Vader in the mask. I didn't know we needed to specify.
Well, he's always in the mask, usually. Except for the end of three, but yeah.
I mean, whenever I picture Hannibal Lecter, I picture the mask on.
No, you're
right.
I didn't think
about that. No, yeah, I just thought about him in his cell. I thought about him just hanging out, talking. Like all those great villains do.
I will say, I mean, you can just say Clarice and you know who you're talking about.
Right.
You know?
Sure. Like, yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's
why I say Jaws, because you can just go, Donna. Dude, an entire like preservation had to go into protecting an animal because of the way that a movie made society feel about
They're
it.
They're protecting an animal. Because the villain, they turned
because the movie portrayed the shark as the villain.
It's not the mayor is the villain of Jaws.
Spielberg would tell you you're wrong.
We got Vader.
Has he ever answered it?
I guarantee you, yes.
We got Vader. We have Michael Myers. We have Ledger's Joker, don't we? Didn't we say that's?
Do we just put Ledger and Hannibal in?
Isn't that a lock?
I mean, I think Ledger's Joker is one of the greatest villains ever.
I think you really have to have that.
And just Joker, the Joker in general is
Joker
like,
in general, but it's Ledger's,
face that's on the representation on the of it. Or Jared Leto's Joker.
Somebody call the Dakotas. We got some work.
All right, and then Hannibal Lecter.
Fine. Beautiful. All right, folks. Well,
Fine. Anything? Has Spielberg ever talked about it?
I haven't seen, but I looked it up, and the first thing that comes up is Bruce the Shark is the titular primary antagonist of the 1974 best-selling novel. Peter Benchley said that I did read that quote. I don't think I've read a Spielberg quote, but Peter Benchley, I feel like, gets a vote.
That's some AI nonsense.
You're AI nonsense.
Well, we have to bring this show to a close. There's a junket afoot that we are chasing.
Oh,
but
yeah, right.
We have a bittersweet announcement at the end of this show, leading us into our call to action. I'll drop the bomb now. People have been asking, people have been curious on social media, but next week we will be back with our Oscars prediction episode.
Ooh, hey, do you know we started as an awards
podcast? We started as an awards podcast, and next week, ladies and gentlemen, we are ending as an awards podcast. Next week will be our last episode of the Real Blend podcast. We're leaving you on that. That's a heavy note. Lots to think about. But next week, we're going to celebrate and we're going to get together and have fun. Maybe we'll have a birthday cake for Sean next week.
When's his birthday?
I have to figure that out.
We're going to be in our feels blend.
But Sean, what's our call to action this week for the folks at home?
Let us know in the comments down below what some of your favorite Real Blend moments and memories are. We're going to go over a bunch of ours on the final show. We'll try to answer some long-standing questions about the show, but we're just going to run through the greatest hits of Real Blend. But we want to hear from you guys. Obviously, we have turned this show into a community-driven program. We love interacting with you guys, so let us know some of your favorite Real Blend moments and memories. In the meantime, continue to follow us on social media. We're not going anywhere, and we'll be back next week with the final episode of the Real Blend podcast. Until then,
Dunkirk.
Done.
Larry Crown.
Yeah. Crown.
Bring it back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.